Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Talgrude.
What's up, guys? Glad to be back. You got the dynamic dummies today, and we're here. We get to talk about more L's. Can't wait to do that. More losses, more points dropped, and then we get to preview potentially more. So, yeah, it'll be a fun one.
Yep. It's been a while since we've done a bit of counselling. I think the last like full-on counselling session was... it was actually probably after the derby, right? And maybe after the Juve game. But in terms of it being a crisis, it's been since like March, maybe. And then before that, January. That's when we had our dips. So they're pretty frequent this year, but we're back at it, man. You said dynamic dummies. I'm not sure how dynamic we can be about what we saw on Saturday. We can't polish a shit, unfortunately, can we?
No.
Yeah, before we dive into it, because obviously we've got one game to recap and two games to preview this week. I've got to say, as always, thank you to our Substack founding members, Des Windsor, McGlynn, Ali Tareen, Tito Mac, Moritz Pullman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, MJ, Mats. That list has already grown quite a lot over the last few weeks. Let's get it growing even more. We're ramping up the bonus content that we're putting out there, which includes our weekly bonus podcast as well. Isaac's doing a great job with all the articles on there. And if you want to try it out, but you don't want to commit to paying the monthly or the yearly yet, then you can try 7 days for free and you can get a bit of a taste of the kind of thing we put out each week. Without further ado, let's get this done. Let's just get this out of the way, man. That's kind of how the game felt, or at least how the players played the game. You know, just get it out of the way. Right, we need to start before the game. Whole build-up. Up until about a day before was, we're going to play a 4-3-3 and it's probably going to be Romero on the right. I think we all thought that might be the most natural solution. Just keep things as they are in terms of the actual structure of the side. And then we've just got to try our best. And if it's not working, you can move someone into that right wing spot or you can change things up there. Then in the build up to the game, it becomes apparent that he's going to switch to a 4-4-2. With Jovic and Giroud up front, Leao on the left, Musa wide on the right for the first time. I say first time, he technically played wing back against Verona. Then Krunic, Reinders in the middle. And the back four was going to be Calabria, Chao, Tomori and Teo. Teo didn't end up starting because of a bit of a muscle problem. So Florenzi came in. Before a ball was kicked, how did you feel about that lineup?
So it was interesting for me because I was busy. You know, I was actually at the Taylor Swift Eras Tour concert. Went round two, second time. So
we can just talk about that for 20 minutes instead.
It was a lot more exciting. It was probably, let me tell you, my day was going great until I got to the game. But my phone was off. I was on Do Not Disturb. I was in a theater. But, you know, doing that, and it's obviously a long movie, like 3 hours long. And then when we did the GPS to see what would be sooner, going home after the movie or going to the game, because the game was like 45 minutes away from kickoff when we got out of the movie. So we went to the bar. It was like 30 minutes versus 35. I'm like, all right, we'll get there. Cool. I was already wearing our third shirt because it's, you know, pink and cotton candy looking colors kind of match some Taylor Swift album cover. So I was like, all right,
it does,
perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we get there. And I'm the only one there. Milan Club DC did not come out for this one. It was just me. So I got to watch it by myself, which was pretty shitty. I had my girlfriend, but, you know, it was not
same
the game where
thing,
you need someone to yell with. So, I didn't know about the lineup. I didn't know Teo was missing. I didn't know anything was changing to a 4-4-2. I just thought, you know, Romero's coming in for Pulisic, and that was it. Mm-hmm. So when that lineup was out, I said, what the fuck is happening here? And, I mean, we watched that game and I just the whole time was just bewildered, baffled. I didn't know Teo was hurt actually until really this moment I got confirmation from you, because I asked in the chat and everyone was just fuming. No one responded to me. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I think here. You realized when the game had kicked off and you're like, wait, where the fuck is he?
Yeah.
So, and nobody said anything because we were already bored with what we were seeing.
Well, it was when I saw Florenzi fucking scuff 20 balls in a row, and I was like, wait a minute, what is he doing? It was just a horrible display from a Florenzi. I thought he looked so poor. And then again, the midfield, Reinders and Krunic, awful. And then Jovic, I don't think Jovic touched the ball the entire first half. I mean, I could be wrong there, but I genuinely don't remember a single moment that he even got near the ball.
He had 12 touches. Now, that surprised me because I don't remember any of them. I remember one of them, actually, where he tries to receive the ball and he takes a touch and he just goes over and he's appealing for a foul. And it's like, come on, you know, you made a career, or at least you kind of leaning into being short and stocky and being able to hold the ball up and kind of bully the defender a little bit. If you're going down the moment you get a little tap in the back, what are we doing here? You know, but yeah, I have no idea how he had 12 touches. And if we needed any confirmation, Krunic Reinders isn't going to work as a double pivot. We got it. Both of them are just so far off the pace.
The way Krunic was playing, I mean, I wonder if he's still hurt, right? Like the way he's performing compared to the way he performed before he had his month-long injury. Night and day different. The things I was seeing him do, it was every pass he'd make was straight to a Udinese player. They were nowhere near our guys. You could tell what he wanted to do. He just couldn't do it. So it makes me think maybe he's not at 100%, or his 100% is no longer what it was, which is a scarier, you know, outcome there. But yeah, you look at the chances, the one that Florenzi missed where he had a very acrobatic little pirouette on the penalty spot with the ball that you're like, all right, this is a surefire goal. And then he just slips. And you're just like, okay, come on. Well, that should be 1-0 for us. And then you see Reinders one-on-one with the keeper. You think, oh, he's finally going to get this goal. And then it hits a side netting. And you're like, okay, that should have been 1-0. It should have been 2-0 for us.
Yeah, it should.
It wasn't. Yeah. And then I think Liao had an opportunity where he ran to the byline. I believe it was in the second half. Mm-hmm. And Loftus-Cheek, who returned.
Wide open.
Wide open, right above him, close to the penalty spot, a little left of it. And he takes a shot instead for like the tightest angle possible that was quadruple covered. It's like, what are we doing here? And then, of course, we give away a penalty from was it Luca Romero who gave away the penalty?
Adley.
It was Adley. It was unfortunate for to come on.
it was unfortunate because I actually think he'd added a little bit of... He'd looked better than Krunic in the up until that point. You know, he was actually spraying the ball around a bit, but it just goes to show he's not a defensive midfielder because... Yeah. You've got to time those interventions perfectly. Otherwise, you're going to give a penalty away. Speaking of which, I am not. I think it was a harsh penalty, to be totally honest. But it's the kind of penalty that you would probably define as soft, in the sense that if it was for us, we'd want it. And because the decision's given, it's hard to overturn because, unfortunately, you can see the contact. But there is just absolutely no way that that should be a penalty. You know,
when I saw it live... When I saw it live, I clapped. I thought, wow, what a fantastic tackle. It looked like he got the ball. It looked like he timed it to perfection, as you said. And then when they showed the replay as he's, you know, same penalty, you see he misses the ball. And he stomps on his foot. And I agree. You know, it's a soft foul. It's a soft challenge. But it is inside the box. And it is a foul. And I think you have to give that. So the gray area is
when the player gets a little touch on the ball, which I think he did. The replay show he got a little toe on the ball. But when you're coming down like that, you're still impeding the man, even if you have got a touch on the ball. You know, it's like the follow through of your tackle. So it's unfortunate. It was perhaps a little bit of naivety, and it comes from inexperience and not being in those positions too many times. And as I say, it came at a moment where I think he was just getting into the game as well. It was a smart bit of play, I suppose, to draw the penalty. That was the only way that they were going to score, even though they did look a bit better on the counter than we did in general. Pereira also converted it pretty emphatically. Maignan got nowhere near it. But yeah, I think you could tell exactly where this game was going after like 20 minutes. It reminded me of those games, sort of banter era games in the mid-2010s where you can tell if we've got it or not. You know, like sometimes we randomly hammer a team and then other times it's like, oh, it's going to be one of those days, is it? You know? And a bit like that under Gattuso as well, you know, where there were some games, especially at home, where if we don't start well, we're under a bit of pressure because our form's not been good. Having a sold-out crowd at San Siro can just as quickly become a weapon against you as something in our favour, because we started slow. The passes were sloppy. players couldn't trap a ball. There seemed to be no organisation. There seemed to be no intent, clear strategy to our attack at all. So then the fans start jeering and whistling these passes that are going out of play. And next thing you know, you can see the nerves start to show through in the players. And honestly, that first half was absolutely dreadful. But it was so clear where the game was going from there. I just thought it looked obvious that we weren't going to win. You know, we had 73% possession. At times, it didn't feel like it, to be honest. But yeah, that's nearly three quarters of the ball that we had. And our XG was less than one. Like, we've criticised this team in games where, even when we've got a positive result, we've generated a lot of chances but missed those big chances. And you say, we need to be careful, we need to start putting them away, because sometimes those will be the only chances we get, and they will directly influence the outcome of the game. There's none of that for this, really. I know there was the Reinders chance you mentioned, but we did not create a boatload of opportunities against one of the worst teams in the league. They were winless in 10 coming into this. Mm-hmm. I know they've drawn 7, so they've got a bit of something about them, like they can be hard to beat, but they'd scored 6 goals all season and let in 14. And we barely tested Silvestri until the last part of the game when it was long shots. It was mostly shots from outside the box. It was unacceptable. That level cannot happen, and it's scary that we dropped to that level.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. I do think it wasn't so much Udinese shutting us out, as crazy as it sounds, because watching it, you know, they definitely looked the team fighting for a top four finish, Scudetto, whatever. And we definitely looked like the team who was a point outside of relegation with no wins when you watch it. But we did create some opportunities. The problem was, we were not taking the right shots, or we just fluffed them entirely. Like the Florenzi one, the Reinders one, Liao had a couple. There were opportunities. I think Giroud even had one that was near.
That back post
on another day, those all go in, you know? On another day, we're up 4-0. Obviously, you know, ifs, ands, or buts, and it doesn't matter. But you look at what is the similarity in every single game that we have dropped points in. The only team that's really beat us was Inter.
Mm-hmm.
Juventus, we had 2 suspensions, a red card early on, and they scored from a deflected long shot. Napoli, we were 2 goals up, and we had injuries at halftime. We had 3 fullbacks to finish the game playing, and we didn't have our most prolific attacking threat in Pulisic playing for half the game. And the substitutes are who caused the free kick, and we drew. Look at this game as well. We're missing Teo. We're missing Pulisic again. And all of a sudden, we're in such a bad shape that we had to put a 4-4-2 to go against this team, where, let's be real, Jovic isn't going to do anything this whole season. Like, this is every third-string striker we've had for the last 5 years. It's just a different name on the back of the shirt, but they're the exact same guy each time.
That's
Allegri
so true.
Was one of them.
Mandzukic
was one. Who do we have last season? Origi.
Yeah. At least he scored twice. There's no chance Jovic scores twice.
But they both got injured right away.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
So it's like there is a little asterisk, because it's not like we're getting totally shut down, except for Inter, which, to be fair, we also had Tomori suspended against. Now, we let in 5, so I'm not going to say, you know, on another day, they smoked
us. That was
a
collapse.
But the other teams aren't really doing a whole lot to take these points from us. We're still giving away points, and that's going to cost us at the end of the season. But I'm still looking at this thinking, if we just recover these injuries, which it looks like we have for PSG with Teo back, Pulisic back, Chukwueze back, someone else returned as well. I can't remember. Loftus-Cheek is now back. I'm looking at it and thinking, we can still make a run for this thing, especially if we do lose on Tuesday to PSG and all of a sudden we're, you know, 2 points out of 4 games played in the Champions League and we're crashing out of that. We can make a serious title push still. It's just we got to stop making these silly mistakes. We got to have a better disciplinary record. You know, Mateo's getting a accumulation suspension for the 9th game of the season. That's an issue. You know, that's 6 cards in 6 games. Like, that's, or 6 cards in 8 games. That's not okay. You can't be doing that. So we got to get our discipline in order, especially with the red cards. We've had too many of those this season. Got to stop giving away penalties. We've given away, I think, 2nd most in the league. We just we got to tighten up on everything. You know, our attack, yeah. our attacking needs to be better. Our shoot, like our attacking's there. We're creating the chances, but it's our shooting that's letting us down. It's our passing that's letting us down in the midfield. It's these injuries. You know, it's look, every team has
big
the same
combination. Excuses,
so I feel
things,
like I'm being just naggy, but we really do have a little bit of an excuse right now. It's not like we're just in total collapse like January where we had everyone and we just couldn't win a game. You know, it's there's been reasons behind it. So it's frustrating, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, it seemed to me to be like the perfect storm of things all manifested into one game. And it can happen because these are humans, not robots at the end of the day. And that applies to the coach as well. Like we've spoken before that we did the bonus podcast on our injury problems and the idea that it's not just you're missing that player. It's the knock-on effect of it. It's that the other starters are having to work overtime. You're having to make tactical shifts. Your depth's reduced. Like it all comes together, especially when it's not two or three injuries. It's eight or nine. You know, that is absolutely huge. We've seen dips in each of the last two seasons that have come probably directly because of injury problems. And it sent us into a bit of a spiral, a bit of a crisis that's tough to come out of. Also, you've got to factor in that we come in off the back of a Juventus PSG Napoli trio of games where we only got 1 point. So all that effort and hard work wasn't really worth it in terms of the reward that we got. But we coming into what even the media have said is an easier run of games now. And it starts with a game at home against a team that haven't won a game all season. And people are just thinking, well, it's going to be a formality. I probably did as well. I think I said 2-0 in the preview. I just thought we'd find a way. And yet we didn't, because the performance that we saw implied that the players were tired. It showed that we didn't really have the ideas to cope with the lack of options on the right side, because we decided to play two strikers up front who they were just never going to work together as a pairing. We've had late injury absences, Teo pulling out on the day of the game. Like, everything just come together to be this massive anti-climax. And I think the fans were right to show their displeasure at the end of the game by jeering and booing the team off. The fact that only eight players went to thank the fans afterwards, the rest went down the tunnel, including Pioli. Whether you want to make a headline of that or not, I don't know. I just think that there's something... I'm not saying there's dressing room mutiny or anything like that. I just think that the players are genuinely struggling psychologically and physically. Like the two have come together and it's, we can't catch a break. You know, players dropping like flies, but also we're struggling to hit form. We're struggling in attack. We're struggling to keep silly goals out. And who knows, maybe the game coming up against PSG, which we'll come on to, will be like the perfect stimulus to come out of it. But look, I mean, I think... people fall on either side, don't they? Like people would obviously, now the majority, I would say, are looking at Pioli and saying, he's lost this group. He doesn't have the answers anymore to take us forward. And then other people would be probably more on the side of, well, the players, the leaders in this team are letting him down. We've had a lot of injuries. The schedule's been tough, sort of finding reasons why it's more than just tactical. But I don't think either side has a strong case after a game like that. Because Pioli got the lineup wrong. He got the approach wrong. So you're pointing the finger at him. Then you're looking at the players traipsing around. You're looking at another shite performance from Liao. You're looking at another game where you just wonder if they're up for it. And that cannot happen. And all of a sudden, it's like, how do you isolate blame? You just can't. Mm-hmm. Everyone's to blame. This is a collective fuck-up of a game that could well send us into a tailspin.
Yeah, I think both sides of that argument are right. I think Pioli's tactics have been bad. His substitution's been bad all season. But he got every substitution right in this game. You know, it just didn't work out. And the reason he got him right is because he made such a shitty, fucking ridiculous starting lineup that he only had the right options to bring on. You know, Adli and Okafor at halftime, that signaled he's afraid that they were going to lose this game. And they obviously ultimately did. But it's also admitting that Jovic is doing fuck all. It's admitting that Krunic was doing fuck all, if not, you know, hurting us. Bringing on Loftus-Cheek for Reinders, who was, again, doing fuck all, for a guy who hasn't played in over a month because of injury, but we know is better, and it's like, okay, we need him in there. Obviously, he was never going to start, but he got the minutes he needed. Musa, I didn't think, was doing terrible compared to the rest of them, especially playing out of position. You know, I give him a bit of a pass for that. But Luke Romero coming on was the right move. That's a guy who normally plays out wide on the right. So I think he actually got this game right in terms of substitutions for the first time in a long time. But unfortunately, that's a result of him getting the lineup wrong and the formation wrong. To change the formation out of the blue, day of or day before, whenever it got announced, I mean, that's a bit ridiculous. Obviously, they probably practice it in training, and we don't see that. We don't know that. But to do it in a game is different, especially when you don't have your starting players. Those are the guys who you're probably practicing that lineup with the most. I don't know. It's frustrating as a fan to watch it, because we had the power of hindsight always, and we had the power of not being checked on our opinions. You know, we could always say, this is what I believe is right, and that's my truth. I know it is, and no one can tell you anything because you're not there. You know, there's no expert sitting by you to say, actually, you're wrong, and here's why. So we're always going to feel justified in our anger towards it, and that's perfectly okay. You know, I do it every week on the podcast. But Pioli's in the position he's in for a reason. You know, if you want Pioli gone, and believe me, I don't want him here much longer, but who replaces him? You know, like, we don't have any manager available right now that's going to take in a team mid-season and transform them. There's Conte, but we all know that Conte takes a year and a half to get the ball rolling, and he's got to rip everything apart first. We just went through a rebuild. Can we afford another one? Probably not. There aren't a whole lot of managers available right now that we could replace him with after 11 games played. So I don't know if we want to throw all the blame on him. I think we almost need to support him right now so that he can get the best of the players, because the players see what we're saying on social media. This, you know, Rafa hasn't scored since September. What the fuck's going on with him? And Pioli's tactics are bad. And they're all seeing this and they're thinking, yeah, you know what? It is Pioli's fault. It can't be me. And so if we support Pioli and say, hey, you got to get behind him, get the best out of him, maybe that'll raise it. Maybe bringing Ibrahimovic back into the squad. I know they're talking about accelerating those talks. Maybe that's what we need. It shouldn't be. You shouldn't need a cheerleader in the dressing room. That should be the manager's job, but sometimes that's what you need. And if that's going to fix it, then do it. But yeah, man, it's a frustrating time, and I'm just ranting in circles now, I think.
It's all I've been doing in my head for days, to be honest. Like, I'm just fed up. It just feels like we can't shrug off these kind of results. You know, they've happened each season under Pioli. And again, I'm not saying it's entirely him. I think there's been different factors at play. But it was so flat. It was so flat when we needed a response after a difficult three games. It was an absolute nightmare result, especially because we're talking about how we need to win these upcoming games to put pressure on Inter, who've got a more difficult schedule. You know, they went and won at Atalanta, Juve won at Fiorentina, and all of a sudden we're six points behind the league leaders. I know what you're saying about how we can still definitely get some momentum together and have a run at the league, but I think this is the weekend that shows that we're not going to fight all the way for the title. I think that we're as capable of dropping points in games. We're probably more capable of dropping points in winnable games than Inter and Juve are. That's just a matter of fact. They've beaten us in head-to-head games, and now it's looking more and more like inconsistency that has crept into this same stretch in each season. Maybe it was a little bit later last season. It's just going to plague us again. Like, unless we can figure something out, maybe bodies returning, maybe having options off the bench, maybe getting a bit of depth back will help. But yeah, I don't know, man. Six points to top feels like a long way. Don't know.
Yes and no. 6 points is a lot when you have 5 games left in the season. You have 27 left. They have to play rivals. Juve and Inter have to play each other twice still. That's 6 points on one of them right there, or at least 3 on each, or 2 on each, you know, or whatever it may be. Like, they have to drop points. They can't not drop points. You know, it's too early in the season to say that they're not going to go, that they're going to win every game left. They can't. So there are points that will be picked up at any point in the season. I understand why you feel that way, that it's probably out of our reach, but it's not like we were 20 points off the top like last season when shit was inevitable and it was like, okay, the season's over, just survive till May and don't crash out of top four. But we're still fighting for it, and I think we're gonna have swing of good fortune in the near future here with the bodies returning, with unfortunately Champions League looking like a foregone conclusion at this point, especially after Tuesday. We'll see what happens, but I don't think we're going through there. I didn't think we were going through before the season started either, so not too pressed by that. I'd like to see us score one fucking goal at least. But I think one competition, because we're... Hey, it's weird how I'm using bad things to say why I think a good thing's going to happen, but we're not going to win the Coppa Italia either. You know, best case scenario, we play Inter in the semifinal. We're not winning that. Inter's three-peat in the cup. So that one competition, we focus on it. We're going to do well. And as long as we could keep people healthy, we're going to go the distance. We're going to be fine. And we may not win it, but we're going to challenge.
I hope you're right, man. I really do. Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll do tops and flops and just etch a sketch this one out of our fucking memories. I'm starting with flop. Jovic. Like, what's the point? Scarecrow. Now, I know people will say he wasn't the one who actually cost us in this game. You can say he was anonymous, but he didn't produce the moment that lost us the game. And I understand that, but... You know, he's been given opportunities from the start now and has shown absolutely nothing. And I think that the fact he wasn't even able to get a foothold in the game made Giroud drop deeper, and that reduced our overall threat. There was absolutely nothing going with either of the wide players. No link up with the midfield. I'm not liking what I'm seeing from him so far. Looks every bit the panic buy at the end of the window. Well, I'll say buy. He cost us nothing. I think we can see now why Fiorentina were willing to let him go. And my top is Tomori. And I'll just say, because he was probably the only one who was a 6 out of 10. Wasn't perfect, but didn't do anything particularly wrong. He covered for Florenzi on a couple of occasions as well. And I just don't think he did much wrong.
I would love to pick Krunic, Florenzi, Reinders. I think they all played horrible games. And I agree with everything you said about Jovic. But as a big fan of this player, I do think I need to call him out when he has a game this bad. Okafor played the exact same amount of time as Jovic. Arguably more, because he had the 7 minutes of added time at the end. He had 9 touches all game.
Ooh.
He completed 1 pass all game. He had 0 shots all game. He had 0 dribbles all game.
Mm-hmm.
He committed 1 foul. And he had 0 tackles all game.
Damn.
I mean,
damning numbers.
You don't get more invisible than that. So
mm-hmm.
I wanted the sub. I thought it was the right sub and a good sub, and I still stand by that. But it brought us absolutely nothing.
I think you make a good argument that he should have started the game as well, alongside Giroud or even alongside Jovic, because with Giroud and Jovic, you've got two profiles that are just too similar. Like, Okafor has played his best football as a second striker, and you choose not to put him next to a more traditional 9, and maybe that would have worked better. We know Okafor and Liao have a little bit of chemistry, and don't know, man. Whole thing, shit. You could pick out anyone, and I would also say in games like this, we need to see more from Liao. I think that's fair. Like before, when he was breezing past players, his cutbacks or his crosses were met by... We got a goal or an assist at the end of his runs, basically. Whereas now, it almost always seems to be either a blocked shot from a shot he shouldn't have taken, or some kind of cutback that's instantly dealt with. Like, the decision-making just isn't there. You know, he's the 7 million euro man. He's the number 10. He's got everything he could possibly need to succeed, and yet he is down in pretty much every major number compared to the last 2 seasons.
A part of that is actually why he's dropped in form. There was an interview before the season started that said, like, this year he's going to get 20 goals or something. I can't remember if he said it or his agent, or it was just predictions or whatever.
It was Gazzetta who said it.
Yeah, maybe it was Gazzetta, but they were hyping him up. And I think he's seen Giroud's on 6. Pulisic's been the better winger this season by far. He's got to recognize that and know that he's getting paid the big money, that he's the star guy. And I think it's putting pressure on him that doesn't need to be there, because if he just plays his game the way he's done the last 3 seasons, he makes that pass to Loftus Cheek. You know, he makes these assists. He's making the right cutbacks. But this season, he's thinking, I got to do everything on my own, and I have to hit that 20-goal mark, because I got Arrigo Sacchi talking shit weekly. You know, you got all these big names that are just shitting on him, and he's seeing all that, and he's trying to prove a point. So that makes him take chances that he shouldn't, and he normally wouldn't. And I think that's backfiring heavily. If he just blocks out all the noise, just plays the way we know he can play as a team player. I mean, he won MVP by getting a hat trick of assists in the final game of the Scudetto winning season. He didn't score a goal. He could have tried. Mm-hmm. Instead, he made the simple pass to win the game. We need that Leao back. So once he starts blocking everything out and just playing the way he plays, we're good. We're back.
Yeah. Yeah, the last goal involvements he had were the two assists against Lazio on September 30th. Last goal was September 23rd against Verona. It's been a while now, and that was when he was playing with a smile on his face, you know? It's gone, and it needs to come back. Maybe a goal tomorrow against PSG will help that. Speaking of which, Champions League. So, guess who has to get up at 3:30 in the morning to catch a 7:30 a.m. flight to go to Milan to go and watch this game live in the flesh?
It's me. Boo-hoo.
Yeah, I know, it's a real tough one. I'm not looking forward to it at all. No, on a serious note, I am really looking forward to this. I know the recent form suggests that we're going to lose another game here against a good team, just as we did in the reverse fixture, but it is a Champions League night. It's a glamorous tie. It's two big names in European football. It's a late kickoff. I do like the 9 o'clock kickoffs. It should be an incredible atmosphere, especially with Donnarumma's return. I am really looking forward to it. Got good seats as well in the second tier. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the occasion, not necessarily how the game's going to play out, you know. We saw what happened in Paris, and it wasn't very pretty. Now I'd say, if anything, the way that the group's played out, with this being, it's not quite a must win yet, but let's be honest, we need a win so we don't have to win our last two. That plays right into PSG's hands with the way that they like to play and the pace and quality that they battered us with on the counter last week. The positives are that we'll have Teo back. He's fine. He just had a knock on his ankle, so he'll be back in at left back. Loftus-Cheek is fully fit and should therefore start in midfield. I think we've missed his size above all. Pulisic is back, and also Chukwueze. So we've got our two right wing options back in the fold as well. Kier expected to miss out. I think that's it really. But yeah, how are you feeling about this one?
Bad.
Yeah, that's no bueno.
I think we're losing. Yeah, I'll just throw it out there. Look, I'm happy we got the bodies back. We need them back. And part of me believes, like, yeah, we could do something. But looking at our shot production over the last run of games, if we can't get a shot off, it doesn't matter. I think we're going to be in Donnarumma's head, and I think he's going to be shaky. And I think if we're shooting on target, he's going to let some in. But we haven't been shooting on target. You know, Marquinhos knows how to defend. Hakimi knows how to defend. Everyone knows how to defend.
Skriniar
knows how to defend. Like, yeah, it's going to be a tough ask.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I just want to reiterate what I said in the preview for this game the last time. I think PSG are a good team, and I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, I know they're still inconsistent, they're ironing some stuff out under Enrique, but I think they've got a real chance of going further than they have in recent years. I know they made the final 1 year, but I think they could go further than recent seasons in the Champions League, because they've got quality and they've got depth. And I think that their back four is really, really good. And their midfield has plenty of talent in it, and the attacking options that they have, when Lee Kang-in is your fifth best forward, you're doing fine. You know, he'd start for us in no problems. And it's scary, really, the depth that they have. And to say, look at someone like Zaire Emery, a 17-year-old who gets thrown into such a big occasion and looks like the best midfielder on the pitch. It's like, wow. There is levels to this, and unfortunately we are still a level below them. And I think anybody that tried to kid themselves that we were better than PSG, even on paper, coming into this game, coming into this group stage, has been proven wrong, unfortunately. And I think that they'll go far, to be honest. I can see them going quite far. I think they've got a better mix this time, and they've got rid of some of the egos. And obviously they've got Mbappe, who is definitely top three player in the world. I am more optimistic about this one than the game in Paris, purely because we've got the home crowd behind us. And in a strange way, I think the bad run of recent results, it tends to be a catalyst for us, especially in the biggest games. You saw how we played that 45 minutes against Napoli after two poor results. We should have won that game, let's be honest. That we absolutely murdered them. We were a pack of rabid dogs in that first half. I think that we'll see a similar energy tomorrow night. We're recording this on Monday, and I expect us to be at them from the off. The one thing we can't do is overcommit, because we know we need to win. But the moment that, you know, 30 minutes in, we've gained too much confidence, we commit too many men forward, bang, and Mbappe up the other end will score and make it 1-0. And that's what does worry me, is that we could just believe in ourselves a bit too much. It gives us a bit of a dilemma, though, doesn't it? Because it's like, do we go after them and risk leaving ourselves open? Or have we got to be a bit more responsible and contain, maybe at the risk of not creating enough chances? I don't know. Yeah. Both teams to score, maybe, would be a good bet.
I don't think so. I think this is another 2-0. They know we need to go forward for a win. They don't.
Yeah.
They've all but punched their ticket. We have done all but, you know, drop out. So we need the win. They don't. We're going to leave them 1v1 again, center back and Mbappe, and they're just going to counter. All they got to do is stop Liao's dribble once. You know, stop a Giroud flick once, intercept a Krunic pass once. Like, they're going to do it, and then boom. Every time they play, two passes, Mbappe has the ball. 2 to 3 passes each time. Takes us 6 passes to get to our forwards, and then they do nothing, you know? Oh, you know, something I forgot to mention about the Udinese game that fucking drove me crazy, so just going to go back to that real quick. It was the 30th minute. We had a throw-in that was level with the inside of their box, their penalty box. We were completely unguarded, uncovered, no one, no pressure. We made 3 passes and they went back to fucking Mignon. How do we go from a throw in their box to our goalkeeper?
I'd like to add to that something I forgot to mention. We had 12 corners against Udinese. One of them was good, I think. One of them. And we had more set pieces. We had free kick chances that we should have whipped in. Our set piece taking is fucking horrendous. It is awful. We never look like we're going to score a goal from a set piece, to the extent that if we get a corner, you might as well go for a piss, because you know that you're going to come back in the room and they're countering. Like, it's just, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. We need to get so much better on that aspect. Defending them, I think you could argue we've done a little bit better this season, but yeah, we ain't scoring them. Sorry, yes, PSG.
No, that was it. My PSG rant ended because I thought of Udinese again, so we're back.
Every single train of thought about any future game just comes back to Udinese, unfortunately. So since we played them last, PSG have won 3-2 against Stade Brestois. They were 2-0 up in that, and then they got it back to 2-2, and then they won it late on with Mbappe. And then they won 3-0 against Montpellier in their most recent game. So they're second in the league now, and I'd say they've stabilized after a rocky period of form to start the season. And that should probably worry us a little bit. And the beauty of their squad is that they're able to rotate, but rotate with quality. That being said, I think tomorrow we'll see a similar starting lineup from them. Donnarumma in goal. Apparently, Curve has sort of got some kind of stunt plan for him with fake money and whistles and a section of the fans wearing a t-shirt with the number 71 on. Now, the significance of that is that Neapolitans, and he's from that region down in the south of Italy, Neapolitans have this strange thing of like numbers being attached to certain things. Superstitious, I guess you could call it. It's like a folklore thing. And number 71, it literally means uomo di merda, like a man of shit with no moral principles. So a whole section of the crowd are going to have number 71 t-shirts on. That should be fun. Whether he sees it or not, I don't know. I don't know if they're doing all this to create a distraction and then hoping that the team can kind of feed off that, because the narrative's about Donnarumma and not PSG are going to crush us. But either way, it might be a little bit over the top, especially when some of our fans were saying, oh, you're going to whistle Lukaku to Inter, and now we're going to probably do the same thing.
It's so crazy, you know, how they don't even see this coming. Like, yeah, hindsight, but like, I knew what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I didn't say shit about it, you know, because I know how hypocritical and dumb that sounds. And you see it week after week. It's
what is football without a bit of. Yeah, what is football without it, though, you know? Like, I don't want football to become this dead respectful, like taking all of the heat and the passion out of it. Like, I do want Gigio to feel genuinely unwelcome, because I think we all have an axe to grind about the way that exit materialized. I just don't know about this, you know, two and a bit years on, and a game that we really need to win.
It is his first time against us, though. First time back against us.
Like, he came back, yeah, as an opponent. Yeah, he obviously played for Italy. I think he's done that more. But yeah, he played Italy at San Siro and got jeered by, I guess, a section of Milan fans that went to watch Italy. But
my concern is if we lose, and probably when we lose, then the narrative becomes, oh, you guys spent all this energy trying to boo the goalkeeper. Why don't you focus your energy towards scoring goals or something? You know, like, I already see how this is going to turn around on us. And it's like, God damn it. You know, if it works, great. You know, you want it to work. That's the whole reason you do it. You do want to get in his head. You do want to give your team an advantage. And that's the one thing the fans can do, because otherwise there isn't a home field advantage. You know, there is no 12th man or anything like that. If the fans can't get in the heads of the opponents, that's what they're there for.
Mm-hmm.
It's when they do things like this, like posting on their Instagram and tagging him, got a delivery for you, and you know it's crates of fake money, and like, he's seen this before. We've done that to him already, so it's, I don't know,
he's probably laughing. He probably can't wait. I hope he's sarcastically like, guys,
he's winning trophies, you know, he's making a shit ton of money, like.
And he does seem to have, like, he has made a couple of errors, don't get me wrong, but he does seem to be the undisputed number one now, whereas he wasn't when he first went there. So you could say that his situation has improved. But we'll see. Like, will I be there booing? Yes, of course I will. Like, I'll try and make it very, very hostile, because that's the whole point. They made it tough for us with the whistling and the noise and all that shit. But yeah, then I guess it'll be Hakimi, Marquinhos, Skriniar, who knows us from the derbies, and Lucas Hernandez, who will have another battle with Teo. Then it'll be Zion Emery, Ugarte and Vitinha, I think. Probably Dembele, Kolo Muani, Mbappe. Again, we had this discussion before, I think, but it's like, it's tough to see which of our players would start in their team, really. You can make arguments for probably three maximum. But they're just a solid side, and I hope people take it very seriously, and I hope people stop talking about the decline of PSG, because I genuinely think that they're a better side now than they ever were with those three superstars that they had. I'm going to do a head and a heart prediction for this. My head says that we lose this 2-0, and it'll be like the Chelsea, you know, Chelsea last season, where we wanted to test ourselves against a team that, you know, being deep in the Champions League, won it recently. We went away to Stamford Bridge and lost 3-0, and we looked poor. And then we came home like, right, we're going to get them back. We're going to have a great atmosphere. And we lost 2-0, and it was like another big anti-climax. I can see this going the same way, especially with us needing to win, really, to have a chance of going through. But my heart prediction says that we always rally in the face of adversity. And this is as difficult a moment we've had this season, without a doubt. And I don't know, maybe we nick it 2-1. So we'll either win or lose. Take that to the bookmakers.
Yeah, we're going to lose. Draw. This is a 2-0 loss. They're going to score early. It's not going to be pretty. People are going to think that they're going to sit back and wait for us to counter, and they probably will, but we're going to push hard and fast immediately, and they're going to immediately counter, immediately score, and immediately shut us up.
It would shut me up. That would be a waste of money for me. But no, I'll hopefully I'll come back with positive reports. From the PSG game, we have a final game in the league before the international break, which is Lecce. So Udinese had no wins in 10 in the league when they came and played us. Lecce have no wins in 7.
Really? Aren't they in the... Oh, they're in 11th right now. Wow.
They started well
because they were up over Roma for a little bit. I was like, they were in 9th.
Heartbreak in their last game as well. Conceded twice in added time. Dybala and Lukaku scored for Roma. Look, again, we've spoken, I guess, about getting these three games out of the way, the Juventus, PSG, Napoli games out of the way, and then we have, at least on paper, a more affordable fixture list. But Lecce, as I said, no win in seven. I saw them in midweek against Parma in the Coppa Italia as well. They were 2-0 down, got it back to 2-2, and then lost 4-2 in extra time. There was like no fans there for it. Otherwise, I think they would have been fuming. But they started the season really well. They were actually in the top. They were third after five games, having won three of them. They were unbeaten. Then they lost to Juve. Then they lost to Napoli. Drew with Sassuolo, drew with Udinese. Then they lost to Torino and most recently to Roma. So I guess you could say that when they've played the big teams, Lazio side, and are they a big team anymore? They've kind of come unstuck a little bit. Though I guess the objective for them will just be to stay up, so they're doing all right in that regard. Versus the manager.
I think you're missing one key component of this matchup here. Pioli. Early kickoff.
Fuck.
We're done.
Is it really?
Yeah.
How early?
It's 9 a.m. for me, so I might be
happy. Well, we're definitely dropping points then.
Yeah, we're going six games without a win here, boys. I mean, we can pull it off. It'll be scrappy. I don't know why it'll be scrappy, but it always is. For whatever reason, if the sun's up when the ball is kicked, it's a rough game for Milan. That's just the way it's been for the last, I don't know, decade that I've been watching. So I would assume it is. This game's no different. Jokes aside, though, we should be able to win this one, right? They're not a good team. They beat Lazio, but who didn't beat Lazio at the beginning of the season? They dropped a ton of points. They almost beat Roma, but again, who else hasn't almost beaten Roma? You know, the big clubs that they actually played well against are the same ones we played well against, and the big ones that they lost to are the same ones that we dropped points to. So it's a... I hate to draw these comparisons, but it's not as bad for them as it looks, and I think it's worse for us than it looks. So we'll see what happens. I still think we'll get through it, but it'll be tight. It'll be tight. 2-1.
Yeah, I think I'm just looking at their record here. I'm trying to find how many goals who scored the goals for them this season. I think, as I say, their objective will just be to stay up. And they're well above that. So anything, I guess, against big teams will be kind of a free hit. And that's what worries me, because they don't have much to lose. And obviously backed by a home crowd, and we're coming off a Champions League game against PSG, which will consume a lot of energy. They'll be well up for this, without a doubt. They've got Nikola Krstović, who we were actually linked with, 23-year-old striker who scored 4 goals this season for them. Pontus Almqvist is another good player that they have. Strefetsa, I always like him whenever I see him. Bachirotto's a pretty solid centre-back. Antonino Gallo is one of the left-backs we've been linked with as a potential deputy to Teo. They've also got Nicola Sansone. There's a bit of threat in there, I suppose, but I feel like a parrot repeating this phrase, but if we are serious about challenging for the title, it simply has to be a win. You know, we've got the international break coming after that, and I know our players fly all over the world, which means that it's not a break, really, but they can leave everything out there. You know, we're not in league action again for 2 weeks, so go out there. You've just got to win. If we drop points in this, you think you're at home to Cagliari. I'm not sure who Inter have, but they'll be at home to somebody easy probably now. There is no option. The best it can stay is a 6-point gap. If it increases, forget about it. We don't deserve to be in the discussion. That being said, I think we are going to win, and I think it's going to be 1-0. I think it's going to be very scrappy, and I think it's going to be a second half winner, kind of like the Genoa game. I'm going to go Pulisic. Obviously, the lineups, we can't do much with the lineups given PSG game happens in between, but if there has to be rotation, then so be it, but we don't know at the moment.
Yeah, the gap between them in 11th and relegation is actually smaller than the gap between us in first place, and we're in third.
Oh wow, so it's pretty compacted there then.
Yeah, so I mean, they need a win, but also so does everyone else below them, you know. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out with them. I don't know. I don't fear them, but I definitely fear us and how we're going to perform, if that makes sense. I'm more worried that we're not going to show up than I am they're going to, which is really how it was against Udinese, honestly. So
I mean, that is so true. Like, we go as far as we perform. Like, the opponent almost doesn't come into it. We know that we can beat any other team in the league as long as we show up. The problem is that we don't show up too often. They also play a 4-3-3 under Diversa, which is, it fills me with a little bit more confidence, because, like, if we're matching up system wise, we should have too much for them, really. But yeah, don't know. Wait until we have to stick Pobega and Musa and, I don't know, Adley, someone from the Primavera in there or something, because we've had about 8 injuries in the week.
I just want Bennacer back so bad, man. And it'll be nice having Loftus-Cheek back. Hopefully he's at 100. Hopefully he can play from the start. I don't know if he is. He's not slated to start against PSG, is he?
Yeah.
He is.
Yeah, but Pioli said he doesn't have 90 minutes, so at some point Musa will come on. Which is fine.
That might give us a big boost, honestly. I think that's something that we have forgotten. Look, all these points have been dropped after his injury, minus the Inter game, which...
I can't remember when it was. I can't remember which episode, but I said that I think Loftus-Cheek's been the most impressive signing of the summer. And I thought with his injury that we'd really notice his absence. And it's not necessarily that Moose has been bad. Reinders has been pretty bad, to be honest, but it's just like everything that he brings, you know, the ground that he covers, his size, physicality, he's good for winning headers at both ends. He seemed to have a really good chemistry going with Pulisic and Calabria, like a little triangle going on the right. He's a goal threat. He's the only one of the new signings, look, for a side who's actually scored a goal, Pulisic side as well, but like of the midfielders, he's actually the only midfielder who's scored a goal for us this season as well.
Yeah.
You know, we need some contribution there, and he's the only one who's brought it. I'm really looking forward to having him back, and I'm glad he's recovered for a game that I'm going to selfishly. But I think we have missed him. I think he'll add a bit more balance that'll be more necessary for the big games, I'd say. But he can definitely make contributions in games like this Lecce one. Did you do a prediction?
2-1.
2-1. We'll move on, do a couple of questions to round off the episode. I know that there are a lot of them about Pioli out, and, you know, I think we've kind of stated our thoughts on that. In terms of replacements, it's tough, but I want to go on record and say that I had the idea this morning while in the shower, funnily enough. Maybe if things got so bad that we had to sack him, so we lose the next two, whatever, then you could tempt Igor Tudor to do until the end of the season, until we wait for a longer term appointment. Tudor is, like, you know, he's your textbook caretaker manager, and he tends to actually do quite a good job. But he has said that he wants his next job to be more than just a caretaker thing. But maybe you tell him it's an audition. If you do well, then
that's how Pioli got it.
All these people saying, like, sack him immediately, get Conte, go get De Zerbi, blah, blah. That's just not how it works. Like, I think we're going to have to see the season out unless things get catastrophically bad. Same people saying, oh, promote Abate. Well, we lost to Empoli Primavera this weekend, so he's still got some stuff he needs to iron out as well. The Pioli out stuff, it's kind of, we can't discuss it every week. Gregory Peck asks, what is this team's footballing style? It kind of feels like it's passed to the left. And also, what is your favourite team, brackets club or national team, footballing style, past or present? There you go.
That's a good question, and I don't think anyone has an answer to it. We play almost with identity right now. It's definitely a get the ball to the wingers and hope for the best sort of deal, whether it's Liao ball or Pulisic ball. Before the injuries, we were very free flowing and it looked nice. Once people started to drop, then all of a sudden it was get it to Liao, hope he crosses it up, hope Drew finds it. And it's not a good thing. I'm going to catch heat for this, but my favorite style of play from a team, I can't remember the years. what was the exact season? I want to say it was either 14, 15 or 15, 16, but it was Liverpool. The year was Suarez when they didn't win the league.
Yeah.
But I mean, every game was just so fun. And the Leicester season was a blast to watch too.
Yeah.
But I think Suarez from that year until he left Barca, probably the best lone striker on the planet. And because he was always with Messi and Neymar, he kind of got overshadowed. But I mean, he was fucking great. I loved watching him play.
It is mad how close Liverpool got to the league with that team, because they've had so many better teams and got nowhere near it. Like that front three, Sterling, Suarez and Sturridge was nuts. It was nuts. Like Suarez was playing kind of on the right then, you know, and it just worked.
He was averaging almost like two goals a game. Like he was,
there was one game against, was it Norwich away or something where he scored five? Something it's just like that. He was unplayable.
Was that the Boxing Day game?
It was definitely over the festive period. Everything he touched went in. It was mental.
It was so fun. And then I think, when the slip obviously cost him the title, which is also an iconic moment that I love. So
yeah, pretty funny. Demba Ba. I think over the summer we obviously transitioned to a 4-3-3, and I think our style was we were planning to go a bit more possession oriented and try and actually pick teams up and with smart build-up and passing moves. And I think he did that to reduce the reliance on us pressing so much and such like an energy-based style of play, I guess, because of the injury crisis that we've had in the past. And of course, we've had it this season anyway. But I think when certain things happen, be it injuries or be it an obvious lack of technical quality to break down deep blocks, which I think is more accurate to where we are, you've got to change things up. And we've gone more towards the counter-attacking style again. The press is still there, like that Napoli game. You know, if you want an example of what this team are still capable of, and it's kind of unforgivable that we've not seen it in any of the other recent games, barring that 45 minutes against Napoli, that's an example of what this team is capable of when they're at it. You know, we were absolutely like a team possessed, and we should have put them out of sight. My favorite team, I guess, in terms of pure football and entertainment, it was probably Pep's Barca. They were really good to watch, but the one criticism would be that they could sometimes be a bit tedious, you know, with the passing all around. I'd say it's 2016-17 Huddersfield Town under David Wagner. It's got to be, man. It's got to be. Or maybe the following season when he outcoached Mourinho. Christian Espinosa also asks, do you guys prefer Jonathan David or Joshua Zirkzee?
I hate that. That's a horrible question. Jonathan David's not a real person. He's a figment of everyone's imagination. He's never scored a goal. These numbers are made up. I don't know.
Has anyone ever seen him play? It's like it's like an urban myth.
It's Jonathan David's not real, man. I don't subscribe to that one. I think it's a waste of money if we get him. I've spent a substantial but not crazy amount of time watching him play, and I've never seen him look good. I've never seen him score. And yet every time I don't watch him, somehow he's got numbers. So I don't know, man. It's
has anyone ever seen any of these goals going?
It's not real. You can't find the YouTube highlights. They don't exist.
Yeah. He's only scored twice this season.
Xerxes pretty cool. I have seen him score a goal, so I'll pick him.
Yeah, I like him. I had, as part of other selections, a bet on him to score against Lazio, and I was disappointed that didn't come in, of course, but it allowed me to kind of watch him and just him to see if it were going to happen that night or not. And even in the games where he doesn't score, as he didn't that night, he looks good. You know, he buzzes around. Like, he's so much more mobile than Giroud, but he also has the size to cause a lot of problems. He can score with headers or with either foot. He's adapted from a winger, I want to say. Like, that's where he started when he was at Bayern. And now I think Bologna is the right level of club for him because he's still young and he can still develop. There's some rough edges that need rounding off there, but I like him and I think he's one to watch. And who knows, like, can we get some money off by saying you can have Salamakers and we'll just take Xerxes for a bit cheaper. I don't know. It's one where I think we need to see how he performs for the rest of the season. But at the moment, I'd prefer him to David as a mold. That's an interesting question. Although my answer to that is Santiago Jimenez over both of them at them.
Do you remember back in secondary school, whatever you guys call it over there, but you'd be picking on your one friend who's just never talked to a girl, and then he says, oh, I have a girlfriend. She just goes to a different school. You wouldn't know her. That's a Jonathan David goal.
Yeah. Not real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if we've got any German listeners, but there's also this thing called, like, I think it's like the Bielefeld paradox, and there's this city that exists in Germany called Bielefeld, but the running joke among Germans is that it doesn't exist because nobody's ever been and nobody knows anybody from Bielefeld. I guess it would be the equivalent of Reading over here or something. Mm. I don't know if there's a US equivalent, but yeah, that's Jonathan David goals.
Ohio.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. A lot of when and how will Pioli be sacked? Well, I presume via a meeting in Cardinale's office. That would be one way to do it.
Or a hotel. Okay. That's how he did to Maldini.
Oh, yeah. I hope they had a good meal at the very least.
Yeah.
Rajat asks, assume you have a budget good enough for a top striker or three other signings, which one would you take? I'd go for a striker myself because clearly our crisis at centre-back is bad luck and bad coaching, not inherent lack of depth. Taremi on a free, plus who would you go for? Another top striker or three other signings?
I'm going with the three signings. I think we need more center. We can't be going into any games where we have our first off the bench center back in Kalulu out for 4 months, our second off the bench center back in Kiera out, and now our third off the bench center back in Pellegrino out, and our fourth off the bench center back in Gabia out on loan. You just can't have that. So get a center back in there, someone who hopefully could stay fit. I don't even care if they're good. I just need a body that's not going to collapse. Get them in there. Get us another midfielder because I'm tired of seeing Krunic. I don't want that anymore. I know when Benacer is healthy, he's obviously going to start, but get us another guy. And then obviously a striker, but it's like, who do you get when you're splitting the pot for three people? So it is a little tough. Or a superstar striker, and then all your problems are solved, right? I don't know.
Big bandage.
If only we got the whole lot. Lukaku, when I said we should get Lukaku, and you know he's on 9 goals in 12 games for a Roma side that doesn't attack. So imagine what he'd be with us. Just saying.
Injured is the answer.
Exactly.
I understand the question here, even though it might sound completely random, but I get it because if we're going into next summer and let's say we don't make another big sale, the budget might only be there because of the way that we're spending sort of within our means. The budget might only be there to go out and get the 50, 60 million striker that we need or 320 million players. You know, we won't have the Tonali money to play with this summer to go out and get 10 signings unless we make another big sale. And that could cause some gaps that we really need to fill. The striker is going to be the absolute paramount importance for next summer because Giroud might not even be here. His deal is running out, but even if he is, he should be third choice. Taremi on a free is an interesting one. I don't see us dipping back into that, not after the way that the negotiations abruptly ended over the summer. Colombo we need to keep an eye on because he's got a match-winning brace for Monza at the weekend. If he can end this season on, say, 15 goals or something, we know we've got a backup there. Like, at the very least, he can be our backup striker, and he's free because he's ours, you know? We can throw him in there, and that's fine, and he'll be happy to rotate in as well because it's all he's ever wanted. He keeps getting loaned out, bless him. But then we will need to invest in another striker. The names keep circulating, whatever. I think we need another defensive midfielder. As you said, there was a guy who we were linked with. Apparently, we had one of our South American scouts watching Fernandez, who plays for Boca Juniors. And there's two Fernandezes that play central midfield for Boca Juniors. And I watched the end of the Copa Libertadores, South American Champions League. I watched the end of that final. It was Boca Fluminense. And one of the Fernandezes looked good. I couldn't tell you which one it was, but him, whichever the good one is, he'd be good to replace Krunic. who I think could be sold next summer if we don't agree a renewal. Centre back as well. Probably going to need a backup left back. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of gaps. There is every summer. Like, I think even though we made 10 signings last in the most recent summer, we can't get accustomed to doing that every year for previously mentioned reasons. And also because it's not healthy having to integrate that many signings. But you can't complete a squad in one transfer window generally. It's like whack-a-mole. Like, when you think you've fixed something, another problem area comes up. We thought we were fine at centre-back. Now we've got a crisis. Speaking of which, if one of Tomori or Chiao comes off or is sent off tomorrow against PSG, do you know who will come on?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, Pierre didn't train with the team today, so he's expected to be out. We don't have Kalulu or Pellegrino. We cannot call up Giancarlo Simic because he doesn't qualify for List B because we haven't had him for 2 years. So it'll be either Clinton Insiala or a guy called Dorian Paloschi.
So any listeners, if you could prove that you knew who they were before today, let me know. And
someone's got his shirt.
I don't know. I'll fucking send you some swag or something. I don't know. But those aren't real humans.
That would be funny. Now, NCL has been in been sort of one of the mainstays of the Primavera for some time now. And I mean, I like him. He plays with a smile. And I think he's an interesting centre-back, especially from a physical point of view. Like, he's a big size, but he's erratic. Kind of like the Kubis thing. He might be the most physically ready, but he's got to sharpen up on certain things. God, if we put him on against Kolo Muani and Mbappe or whatever, fuck. It's going to be brutal. We'll wrap it up there. I've just seen we've been going for over an hour. So thank you to everybody who made it all the way through this counselling session. We hope that, you know, we were able to iron out some of those issues that we're all facing, the Udinese syndrome, etc. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
Yep, it's a good one. Obviously, international break for next episode, but we'll be here and then we'll figure something out for the week after. It's Thanksgiving. We're not sure what the plan is yet, but we'll let you guys know. So thanks for listening.
Thank you for watching, everyone. We'll catch you in a week's time.
Goal! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'ora all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio...